This is Wade Bresky with the Chief Organizer's Report, reducing healthcare costs. These days, a new year means a notice from your health insurer, if you have one, both private and public, of the amount of the increase in premiums or deductions from your Social Security checks. With the Trump budget bill, it will also mean changes coming in the amount of subsidies for policies offered on the Affordable Care Marketplace, which is still open until the middle of January, which is another way of saying that millions will lose coverage. It's hard not to feel helpless, since so much of it is out of your control. Private health insurance means covering the risk of illness by either paying the piper or gambling on another healthy year. Not using the benefits of the coverage yields no personal benefits. It's not like seeing a reduction in your car insurance because you didn't have any accidents or speeding tickets. There's no reward for good health, except, of course, that good health is absolutely better than bad health. Because of that, health providers and insurers lay down a steady drumbeat of what we should do individually to stay healthy by eating better, exercising more, laying off the drinking and smoking, sleeping more, and the beat goes on. We can do all of those things, or a good amount of them, and still see our costs rise 10% or more since we are a captive market for them. Why the costs so high and what can be done about them is worth some thought. The former head of the Office of Management and Budget under Obama, Peter Orszag, made some interesting points recently, pointing the fingers away from us and at the real drivers of health and higher prices. Here's what he underlined. 25% of the costs are estimated to be waste, which could be lowered with more evidence-based approaches to care. High cost, high complexity cases drive spending. The costliest 5% of the population accounts for about half of healthcare spending, while the most expensive 1% drives over 21% of the cost. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not begrudging these folks' efforts to live, but I'm not sure why we're all subsidizing it exactly. Studies have found that spending per person varies significantly by region, with no correlation between higher spending and more effective care. Another study within the military health system found that 80% of regional spending has nothing to do with patient conditions. Higher costs are largely a function not of sicker patients, but of local medical cultures that favor more aggressive care, meaning more tests, days in hospital, and more procedures. This is a systemic issue, not an individual one. Maybe applying artificial intelligence will help cut back on unnecessary procedures, which seems to already be happening in heart and cancer wards. Orszag argues that uniform standards on medical malpractice might help, as well as flat rates for standard visits and procedures. It's hard to believe that doctors and hospitals are going to lead the change here. Government action on the drug schedule will help, but the government is on the wrong track by looking to cut the public costs with work requirements and bureaucratic denials, which will translate to more deaths and increased demands for charity care in hospitals. What's needed is a whip hand that equalizes regional differentials by not reimbursing costs for unnecessary care and pushing insurance companies to hold doctors and hospitals accountable rather than acting arbitrarily against patients. Needless competition between facilities also raises costs in an area generally. The government insurers and insurers need to push providers to specialize to provide the best care rather than hospitals trying to be all things for all patients. When something is this far out of control, the case for more controls should be obvious. This is Wade Bresky for questions or comments, www.chieforganizer.org. You take it from here to there.